Good, so now we're holding in the sixth parak. And the sixth parak is less mathematical than the fifth, but don't worry, the seventh takes the cake. But Mishnah, but Parak Vav is a break from that. Parak Vav is dealing essentially with leasing fields. Okay, Parak Vav is leasing fields. Now when it comes to, in Mishnaic times, there really were three ways to lease fields. The main two ways, which is all we're cared about here, is a res, being an aris, called a resus, or being a chocher, like a hachira. Okay, I'm going to explain them to you both here. I was getting confused, so if you did too, that's okay. A resus is an aris is a sharecropper. Sharecropper, that means they go into partnership. The owner of the land, the field, says, listen, you sit in my land, you live there, you work the field, so I own it, but you do all the work, and we'll split the proceeds. However you split it, doesn't matter. It's called 50-50. It doesn't matter. It could be any percent you want. The point is that the person living, the sharecropper, has a fixed percentage of the yield that goes back to the owner. Okay? Sharecropping. That's the most common way to do it. Now, there's a second way called chakira. Chakira, really. A chokher is someone who leases the field and he agrees to pay the owner a fixed amount of produce. Fixed amount. I'll give you, take over your field, and I'll give you 100 bushels of, you know, wheat every year as a fixed payment. Now, as you can imagine, that really is much more oppressive and really much more potentially lucrative for the landowner. The landowner is much more exploitative of the tenant, because the person there, the tenant farmer, we'll call it in English tenant farmer, really can really be squeezed. In a bad year, he's on the hook for all the money and has nothing to give, or maybe has to give all of his produce.
What about a good year?
Right? Okay, so in a good year, but the point is, you know what? They have a few, right? The good years are always easy to come by, but the bad years is when you really got, as you might have noticed from 2008, right? Bad years, you get squeezed. That's bad news. So it's considered much more exploitative because you really can, listen, it's like kind of like debt and equity, really what it is, right? So in an RS, basically they're equity partners, 50-50. In a chakira relationship, it's really debt. You give me a fixed percent every year, whatever, a fixed yield. I want $100 coupon, and that's it. But so there's much more risk. There's much more risk in a debt relationship, because one person has to pay no matter what. Right, so the borrower is at risk. You can get in big trouble. So the Chazal, we're going to see, and we're going to get there in a moment. We're going to have what happens if the Jew is the tenant versus the landowner versus the non-Jew. And there's another principle here going throughout the whole Mishnayos here, which is we want Yishev Eretz Yisrael. We want Jews to live in Eretz Yisrael. We want them to own the land. We want them to work the land. We want to make it difficult for non-Jews to exploit Jewish labor and own the land in Israel. So that's one of the factors here. Okay, the third way, I told you, the third way of leasing a field is what we'd be more accustomed to in our times, which is basically for money. It's called the schirus. The socher is a renter. But since most people who are farming, in an agricultural society, everyone's living at subsistence level, they haven't got money. Who's got money to rent a field? Right? So that's not how it worked, usually. So schirus is uncommon in those days. Yeah. Today people have lots of capital, so they'll rent fields. But even if it would be schirus, it's not relevant to our Mishnah, because our Mishnah is going to be, now how do you divvy up the hafrushes of the produce? In other words, I owe you, let's say 50-50, I owe you 50% of the wheat crop, either as a 50-50 flat rate or 50% as a fixed rate. Either way, which of the hafrushes do I have to do before I give it to you? Which are you allowed to keep? Which one I have to keep myself? If I'm a Kohen, if you're a Kohen, that's the issues here. Okay, fine. So we start now. Perek Vav, Mishnah Aleph. A makabel sadeh mi Yisrael. If a person is makabel, this is an aris, I mean a sharecropper, from a Jew, or min a nachri, or from a non-Jew, umin a kusi, which, as you know, in times of the Mishnah is just a regular old non-Jew here. Okay, yechalek lifnehem. This is an aris, so the aris pays the fixed amount. So he brings 50% of the produce, or whatever the number is, or a third, or a quarter. And he will basically, it says, he just puts it in front of him and says, here's your tevel, have a nice day. It's your problem to do with tafrashas. Okay, straightforward.
Is it also considered a mer?
Now, yes, good point. So, as you know, there's a big machlokas here about if the obligations of a non-Jew, if a non-Jew owns land in Eretz Yisrael, if it's obligated to be tithed and so on or not. So we're going, it's a machlokas, Rav Meir says yes, and Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon says no. So we're going in that world. Now the truth is, there are those who say it could equally be understandable like Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon. All you have to say is then, we're, the chiddush of the Mishnah is we're not imposing a special penalty on him. It's all pater. It didn't say you're chayiv. Just says yichalak l'tnayim. Let him deal with it. And we're not imposing a. If the Mishnah has to be read, because it could be read by Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon, so and the it's non-Jewish property and it's totally exempt from hafrashas. So then the chiddush of the Mishnah is that we're not penalizing the Jew. As you'll see, the next Mishnah we go and penalize Jews who are resident in non-Jewish fields because we want to make it hard for them. But we're not doing that here. Okay, I'm fine. Good. Hachoker. If someone is a chocher, that means that he's paying a fixed amount, like lease, you know, he's paying 100 bushels a year, regardless of the yield. A chocher sada mi Yisrael. So then he has to be torem v'nosan lo. He has to take the truma off, and the rest, and he gives it to him in the truma removed state, but with the maestro still embedded. The reason why is, even though we said before that you're not supposed to give anything untied out of your hand, here we're being easy on the chocher because he's being exploited here, so we want the Bala Bais to have to swallow as much as possible. The thing is that as a general rule, when it comes to truma, you're meant to take truma as fast as possible, meaning at the threshing floor before it's pulled in. As soon as that's gemar malach, remember meruach chesakri, and you finish piling it up. So then, you already, it's a chayav and truma, and we want truma to be given then. The reason why is because we're afraid truma lingering around is going to end up becoming tummy. Right? So we want to just want it out of the system as fast as possible. So a question that came up yesterday, by the way, is how can a regular person give truma? Regular person is not a chaver, is a chashad in being tummy. Second, he takes the truma off, so then it's going to become tummy on the spot. So the answer is, and it's an important rule to keep in mind for all of tuma, is that food doesn't become tamei until it becomes mukhshir lakavul tuma, until it's ready to receive tuma, which means it has to get wet first. So as long as it's, when you first pile it up and it's all dry, it's like impervious to tuma. And if a zav or a nidar, you know, sheretz, whatever it is, you pick your favorite tuma, comes and touches the grain is tahor, not a problem. The tuma is tahor. When it goes bad is when it gets wet. So we want it before any chance for things to get out of control, we want the truma away. Therefore, if you are a choker, the sada from Yisrael, so torim, you take the truma on the spot away and separate it, and let him deal with the rest. V'nosan lo, he has the rest of the problem himself. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, a Masai, and we keep on seeing this pattern again and again in this Masechta, that maybe we saw in Erev and Bebes, he's just adding, not arguing. When does this apply? Bizman shenasan lo ma'osa hasada o ma'osa min. That assumes that when the aris, who has a debt of 100 bushels of wheat, is giving it ma'osa sada, the wheat from that very field, ma'osa min, and from like the wheat that field and that field's wheat. But aval im nasan lo misada acheres, if he's paying from wheat from a different field, min acher, or paying the value with a different crop, then you're now paying your dues, and if you're not allowed to use untied food, right, to pay your dues, therefore ma'aser v'nosan lo, get the first to the hafrasha before you do it. Okay? So if you're, I guess, in a bad year and you're bringing from other fields or other payments in, you can't use untied food. Okay? You're not allowed to be poti or chov and exempt yourself with untied food. Good?
Just one thing. We started with truma and we ended with maaser.
In this parakadogma?
So
I'm going to remind you, because there's maaser embedded there. There's maaser embedded there, but we're making the choker have as little burden as possible, and therefore truma is taken off because of the fear I told you. But the rest, the maaser is the problem of the bala bias.
So why does he have the maaser then in the sefer?
Because once he's using some other produce to pay, he can't use levies and ani's food to pay off his debts. He has to be mafresh everything first. One of the other reasons given the Mefarshim is like the Bala Bias, who essentially, because you say maybe it's economically the same, if you figure out who's only going to get the loss, if you will call it that, is swallowed by the Bala Bias. In other words, When we say Torah Venosim, though, he's giving 98% of the produce. He doesn't have to add an extra 2% to pay the full 100 bushels again. He'll end up giving 98 bushels. And if he had the deal with 100 bushels, he'll take off 2 for Truma and he'll give him 98. He doesn't have to add 2 more out of his pocket. So here, the Balabayas will say, listen, I like my field and my produce. If you want to pay someone else's, I'm not accepting anything less than the full, you know, every penny paid, naki, you know, from all cheshash, meisters and trumas. So that's why. Once you're paying from other source, it has to be totally musukan. Okay? Now, great. Mishnah base. You came in a very technical, I have to tell you, it's your first day here, you came in a very, very, you came in the thick of it. It's not all so necessarily so technical. Okay? So, Mishnah base. Now, if you notice, in the beginning of the Mishnah we said, for the Makabal, we talked about the Aris, we talked about from a Yisrael and from a Nochri, Jew and non-Jew. But when it came to the Choker, we only mentioned from a Yisrael, but not from a non-Jew. We said that for the next Mishnah here, because the Dinim are different. HaChoker Sadeh Min Nochri. If you are now a tenant farmer, and you're the land owner is a non-Jew. So the rabbi didn't like this. First of all, because Jews don't own the property, and second of all, because they're being exploited by the non-Jews. So, get this. We penalize the tenant farmer and say, Maaser v'nosim lo. He has to do all the frashas himself and pay. They're saying you have to pay more if your landlord is a non-Jew. You have to. It's less profitable for you as a sharecropper. What was the idea? As a tenant farmer, I should say. The idea was that people will say, "Well, I'd rather be a tenant farmer for a Jewish field, and the non-Jewish fields will be fallow, then the non-Jewish landowners will be forced to sell their fields to Jews, and then that will push Yishuv Eretz Yisrael." Obviously, if every Jewish field is employed and farmed, then Jews will have jobs in the non-Jewish field. But we don't want to have non-Jewish fields laying fallow and Jewish fields. We don't have Jewish fields laying fallow if there is labor going to non-Jewish fields. So the way we force that is by forcing a kanas, a penalty, on the Jewish choker to pay more, so he'll be induced to go elsewhere, and therefore economics will push the non-Jewish owner to sell his field. Okay? Fine. Choker sadeh min nochri, maaser v'nosim lo. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af ha-makabel sadeh avosav min ha-nochri, maaser v'nosim lo. So Rabbi Yehuda adds now another category. He says, forget, even if it's not a chakira, but if it's an aris, it's a sharecropper, and he's a sharecropper working on a piece of property that it's his family estate. His family used to be there, and now the nochri owns it, either legitimately or illegitimately. Either the non-Jew purchased it, or the non-Jew basically kicked his dad off the field. Either way, we know it's going to happen. The person has his heart is attached to this place, and therefore he's much more likely to want to buy it, much as any old property. It's his family estate. Again, especially either because the father sold it out of poverty, or the goy forced him out of it. Either way, we know if we induce the guy with a little extra incentive, he'll be likely to save up and redeem his field back. So therefore, we force him. The Rabbi Yehuda says we force him to maaser v'nosim lo, to have an extra tax on him, so he'll be induced to want to buy the field back, and that will bring the Jews back in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and owning their own land. Okay, good. Mishnah Gimel. Now we're dealing with a case here where the workers in the field are a Kohen or a Levi. Okay, so remember, now the Kohen or Levi is going to want to have his hafrashas. Now the real, if we've seen already here, although the burden of tithing is sitting on the landowner, not the worker, not the sharecropper or tenant farmer, but even so. So that implies that who really has the schus, who has the merit to choose which Kohen is going to give. You know, tzedakah is a schus. We talked about it in Peah. God gives you money at the end of somebody else, but it's nice to be able to choose your charity and your Kohanim and your Levim and your Anim. So there's a question now: if the Balabais will be prepared to transfer those rights to the Truma or Miser, to the given Kohen or Levi sitting in the field. Okay? So, Kohen v'Levi, if you have a Kohen or Levi, Shekiblu Sada Mi'Yisrael, who are now the Aris Sim, either one, Kohen or Levi is an Aris on a Jewish field. Kishem Shecholken B'Chulin, just the same way that they divide up in the Chulin, I whatever their relationship is, on a pro rata way, 50-50 or 1/3, 2/3, whatever it is, kach holchim betruma, they similarly divide the truma or the miser. In other words, we'll let the Kohen keep his shares truma for himself. We don't. He's allowed, or the Levi keep his shares Levi for himself. Yeah, his share of miser doesn't have to give it all to the balabais, because we say that's. It's unless obviously with all things, if there's a specific agreement, then there's a specific agreement, and it goes by those terms. But otherwise, we assume the landowner is prepared to, like you know, give at least his share, the his worker's share to his worker. Okay, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, af hamaisros shalahen, shall. He says, if a Kohen comes, and of course the Truma. I'm sorry. Rabbi Eliezer says that he gets everything. That the tenant farmer gets the whole thing, all the hafrashas. Because why? Shalmanas kein bo. They came with the mind. The stam kavan is they came to be workers on the field because they're going to be able to have an extra profit here. So Rabbi Eliezer says the maaser shalahen if it's a Levi or the Truma would be theirs if it's a Kohen. So he's instead of like a pro rata dividing up the hafrashas, he says the worker gets all of the hafrashas that he's entitled to. Okay?
But if the worker is a Kohen, he's going to have to give it to the Levi.
Yeah. Well, at least he has a schus of choosing which Levi wants to give it to. You know what? It's not meduic like that in the Rav. If you look at the Rav carefully, by the way, the Rav says, he says, Mashalhen, Ima Makabal Kohen, then kol hatruma shalom, vim levihu kol ha-maiser shalom. So, I think if you read the Rav carefully, I think what he's saying is the Kohen gets the truma, but the maiser still goes back to the landowner. The landowner will be able to choose to whom he gives his maiser to. If you told me that wasn't what he meant, like I wouldn't fight you, but I think that's how it reads. The truma is shalom, vim hu levi, ha-maiser shalom.
The benefit of the
ratio of
the mission, the benefit for the landowner is that he gets to choose also who gives his
trumas and maasers to. Yeah, yeah. And what's called tovos hana, it's like, everyone likes to have them be the charity giver. So I'm like, why? Why do you want to give it up? He has his favorite, his cousin, the lady, whatever it is, you know, on his mother's side. So, yeah. Okay, we have time for one more? Good.
Does he get a trumas and maasers as well? If it's a coin, can he take the trumas and maasers straight away?
I don't know.
You know, there might be a point here because the Kohen doesn't have to prove himself as the Levi does. No one knows Levim, so it could be that Taka remains by the Kohen.
You know, the truth is, Halach Lamaisa, I don't know what happened. I know that in the beginning of Bayis Sheni, when Ezra came back, the Levim didn't come with him. Only like 40,000 Jews came back from Bavel. It was a bit of a very bad situation. So Ezra was very angry at the Levim for not coming back. And he basically punished them and said, no maaser for you, only the Kohanim get it. I don't know if that ever changed. So, could be that, anyways, by Shani's time and Mishnah's time, the Levim, the Kohanim were getting everything. I just don't know. I don't know if, like, at some point that reverted back. Presumably, it will revert back in the future, assuming that the Levim come to Israel. But, so this I don't know about the Trumas Maaser. I just don't know. It's like, no one deals with that. The best I have is that Diak and the Rav. So I don't know. No one that is all dealt with it. Okay? We're doing one more anyways. Okay, Mishnah Dalet. The other way around. Yisrael Shekibel Mekohen Umalevi. Here, the owner is the Kohen, or the Levi, and the Yisrael is the worker. So now here, it's not just... Yeah, Hamaisras Labalim. All the Maisras are going to stay in the Labalim. Because here, you'd have to assume, without any contract, that the owner, who's a Levi, let's say, who's got all this 10% extra coming to him, is going to just... give away 10% or to the Yisrael, which is like not reasonable to assume that. Why would he give it away? If it's a Yisrael, the owner, and he can't eat it anyways, so you figure, okay, so he'll let his it's his friend, it's his worker, like he'll, you know, give his worker, can't eat, you know, it's no real loss of his back besides like the, you know, being the big tzaddik to give the sucker. But the other way around, it's actually 10% financial loss. So not likely. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, and there, it's not likely, so the maasers go to the bottom. He has to give it. All the fashas go to the Levi or the Kohen who can deal with it in his way. Rabbi Yishmol Omer, Hakartani. A Kartani, like let's call it a villager, it just means the Rambam explains anyone who's a non-Jerusalem liver. So if you're not living in Jerusalem, you're a Kartani, you're a villager.
Shekibel Sada Mirshalmi, and you have a Jerusalem resident who owns a field somewhere, outside of the city, presumably, right? But and you have the villager working that field, but the field is owned by the Jerusalem dweller. So Rabbi Yishmael says, Maaser Sheni Shel Yerushalmi. Like a parallel case, he says, since the Yerushalmi lives in Jerusalem anyways, and all Maaser Sheni has to go up to Jerusalem, so presumably, when the Yerushalmi rented out his field, leased out his field, he expected to get the Trumas Maaser back. Excuse me, sorry, the Maaser Sheni back, and he would eat it. The Chacham Omrim, no way. Yachlo kartani lalos v'lachlo b'Yerushalayim. What's the problem? The Chacham say, listen, this guy's going to come to Jerusalem sooner or later. When he comes to Jerusalem, he'll take his truma, his Maaser Sheni, up with him. So he can do it, and therefore the halacha, like the Chacham, the kartani gets to keep his Maaser Sheni, and he'll take it to Jerusalem himself. All right, yeshakah. Very good.